Okay, we're good. And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this fall practice breakdown. From what we've seen out at spring or fall practice, now here I am saying spring practice, and what are we, 2 weeks as we record this tonight until the first game? So
we are,
I better change my best here.
Well, we're sitting here. I read 7:53 p.m., so we're actually 7 minutes and 2 weeks away from kickoff.
Is it really an 8 p.m. kick?
I think I'm almost positive it's an 8 p.m. kick.
Gosh. So speaking, it's going to be a late night.
It's going to be a late night, but speaking of, you know, we actually have the Goal Line Club sponsoring us again. So we'll give a shameless plug. This isn't technically in our contract, but if you're going to be there, this is a good one to tailgate early. And if you want to tailgate early and you want to join the Goal Line Club's tailgate, which Ryan and I can both attest to is super legit, there is a promo code that you can use for the podcast. It is OPENER5, OPENER5. So go to their website, goalineclub.org, find the South Dakota State tailgate. You can use the opener 5 code to save some money. I believe it's $5 on joining that tailgate. It's going to be a lot of fun. So get over there. It's probably one of the best tailgate experiences you can find, because one, you didn't have to do anything but show up.
Yeah, it's really nice. And whether you have kids or whether you're going to be coming with you and your spouse, or but you by yourself or you with some friends, I can tell you, if you're going to be consuming an adult beverage, they make them with a little bit of hair in them, in terms of they aren't afraid to put a little extra in there to make sure you're feeling extra ready to go to cheer on this Golden Gopher squad. There's plenty of great people inside there, and I'm sure it'll be beautiful in 2 weeks from tonight outside. Right of Williams Arena there. So, I mean, I can vouch for it. I've been to some tailgates in my day. And if you're looking for, whether it's a kid-friendly one, you can find, you know, other spots in terms of at that tailgate where maybe you want to cut loose a little bit. You can do that as well. So if you want to go to the tailgate, go to goallineclub.org. Under events, find the South Dakota State tailgate, and then put in the promo code OPENER5, OPENER, and then the number 5.
All right, Ryan. So here we sit, like we said, very close to fall camp ending, and we will actually be watching some games. But we've had a little bit of fall camp to take in. I know that you have some borderline frustrations with the amount that the media gets to view. I'm not going to let you cut open a vein. I'm going to hold you back today.
Right. But I'm sure once we get to certain position groups, I'll go off a bit. But I mean, I wish I could see it. Like Illinois, for example, has had daily access for the entire practice for like 2 weeks straight.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, I've seen like a padded practice and a few other practices, but it's better than nothing. So
yeah.
If the lovely Mr. Paul Rovnak is listening, we appreciate you, but gosh darn it, if you can't give me more than 2 open practices, I would be more than gratuitous towards you.
Yeah, and you know, this is one of the things that the previous regime did quite well. They had quite a few open practices, almost all open practices, if I remember correctly.
I mean, for some of the other media members, they didn't want to be there at every practice because what their journalistic assignments were much different than mine. So what they were trying to glean on a daily basis compared to what I was trying to write about, it was pretty frustrating for them, where for me, it was gold. And going from 10 open practices per spring/fall to 3 to the public, 5 total to the media, with the final one being tomorrow. So if you're listening to this on Friday the 16th, you can come out to go for practice. Is it the new practice facility there, 4:15? Unlike last Friday where it was a walkthrough, I think this one is going to be a little bit more physical. So if you were a little disappointed that the walkthrough last Friday because you weren't able to make it to CCF Bank Stadium on the 8th, I think this one's going to be a little bit more physical.
All right. So one of the big things about fall camp is you have a number of freshmen coming in that haven't been a part of spring practice, even though a number of these Gopher freshmen have. So that's one of the things that people can glean from fall camp. They have an opportunity to win a position where they haven't really even had a chance to compete yet. So obviously we'll probably talk some of that, but I think we should start on the defensive side of the ball, Ryan. I'm curious, you know, defensive line is a spot that we've talked at length in our defensive preview where we had some question marks. We weren't entirely sure what we're going to expect. Now, having seen, you know, a very small sample size, where do you see this Gopher defensive line trending? And maybe some guys are going to get some significant playing time, at least from early indications here in fall camp.
Yeah, if there's a position group I feel much better about in the fall than I did in the spring, it is defensive line. I was pretty worried about the defensive tackle spot. I was a little bit worried about who's going to be playing at defensive end outside of Carter Coughlin, who's going to come up, kind of rise up and try to take some reps there. Because one of the big things that Jim Panagos talked about last week with the media is not only does he want to play double-digit off defensive linemen, I mean, he wants to play 11, 12 guys just to keep everybody fresh, keep everybody motivated to know, you know, if you're going to get your 15, 20 snaps a game, when you're on the field, you can't be going through the motions. You have to give it all. And it just helps everybody keep their legs fresh going into November. And so when you look at the defensive end spot, we'll start with the strong side. I'm still a little bit surprised that Winston Dilaidi-Boudère is running with the ones, because that's how good Asezi Otemiwu has been. He has really filled out that frame. I mean, he finally looks the part of a Big Ten defensive end, the kind of guys that Iowa has been throwing out at defensive end for many years. He has been flashing consistently in the spring. He's continued that over into fall camp. He has been a handful for whoever he's going against. And while I don't think there's anything really disputing that Winston is the undisputed leader and the vocal leader and the heart and soul of this defensive line, I just think the ceiling is so much higher with a guy like Asezi, where he's still only a redshirt sophomore. You saw him a little bit last year towards the end of the year. He was number 9 on your programs and number 1 in your hearts. But where he was really starting to excel was he was getting better with his hands. And that's where Jim Panagos has really come in and worked with him and trying to refine that technique. Because the athleticism, the physique, the physical talent is there. It's just been about consistency. And that's one of the big things as we continue to go through with this defensive line talk. It's just an experience. And so that's where a guy like Asezi is going to get a lot of reps. So is Winston. Now, I think the other interesting part there is you're going to see a defensive line floater between positions, between the 5 technique and the 3 technique, and that's going to be from redshirt freshman Maya Nahanatu. Now, you may remember him from the 2018 class. So he redshirted last year. You know, he's the son of an NFL. His dad played in the NFL, and what he's done here in the last 12 months, which has kind of accelerated his development, is he's put on weight, and he's put on really good weight. I think he's probably in that 275-pound range. And if I could look that good at 275 pounds, Luke, I'm going to tell you this much. I'd be weighing 275 pounds right now. Like, his 6'4", 275 looks much better than my 6'4", 235, if that makes any sense. So, you know, he just, you know, the biggest thing with Mayan and why he's put himself in his defensive line rotation and why you're going to see him take snaps this fall is, his motor is up there with being the most relentless besides Winston. I mean, him and Winston are in the same tier in terms of how relentless their motor is. And that plays a lot with Jim Panagos, who's a big effort and energy guy, because Jim Panagos has as much energy amongst the coaching staff as anyone. I mean, he's up there with PJ Fleck. So between Winston, Asezi, and Mayan on that side, on the other side, maybe my biggest surprise on the defensive side of the ball so far in fall camp has been Teyon Devers. Now, Luke, you may be thinking to yourself, why do I remember the name Teyon Devers?
I remember the name Teyon Devers because he decapitated a Oregon State quarterback, not once, but like twice, and he had like three sacks that his first freshman game. That's how I remember Teyon Devers.
Yeah, Teyon Devers is a true freshman at like 205 pounds, just speed rushed the crap out of the non-conference when he was a true freshman, decapitating a quarterback, making it onto SC Top 10, making it onto SportsCenter. And then for the past 2.95, you know, the last 2.5 to 3 seasons, he's been on a milk carton. So we're sitting here going through spring ball, and I'm thinking to myself, now, Teyon Devers looks like he's finally maxed out that frame, but, you know, he's stuck behind Carter. He's stuck behind Boye. And then we get to fall camp here. Carter's been dealing with a little bit of a tight hamstring. He hadn't been practicing for the first couple of weeks. And it wasn't Boye Mafe getting the first string snaps. It was Teyon, and he was doing a lot with them. and he still had that burst and explosion off the line, but he's just added 40 pounds since you last saw him play meaningful downs. And I asked Jim Panagos and PJ Fleck about that last week, was what has caused Teyon Devers to resurface? And they both have said, you know, when Jim got here, it was just a renewed energy. It was a renewed sense of, I have a chance at this. And now here we are, Teyon Devers, when Carter was out, was getting the first string snaps and doing stuff with him. And now for those of you holding your breath thinking, wait, Carter's out, how long is that going to be for? Well, I can tell you Carter was back, what was that, practice on Monday. He was going through individual, wasn't having any issues there. That's definitely a step in the right direction. I think they were pretty leery with him on the Tuesday scrimmage, and we'll see what he's able to do at Friday. But again, we're 2 weeks out. The staff knows what he can do. They know that he had 15 sacks and, or was it 15 tackles for loss or 10 sacks? Either or. He was the one-man wrecking crew, so they know what they can do. And the rise of Teyon Devers has kind of led me, and I know some people on the staff, to kind of evaluate where are things at with Boye. Because Boye was the guy I was tremendously high on. This was the guy that I know many members of the staff were incredibly high on coming out of spring ball. And while Teyon has been good, you know, the consistency with Boye is still getting there. Now, that being said, you're going to see Boye, Teyon, and Carter on the field at the same time at some point in the non-conference, because the passing down packages that Joe Rossi has been showing in practice display creativity, which is the anti-Rob Smith method, where we're just going to be bland. We're not going to throw anything different. Well, Joe Rossi in his first offseason here has been very creative in terms of what those looks have been like in practice. So you're probably going to see some kind of variation of maybe a 1-5-5, maybe a 3-4, but maybe there's only one guy with his hand on the ground and you have six other guys standing at the line of scrimmage, from Carter Coughlin to Kamal Martin to Thomas Barber to Thomas Rush to Teyon Devers to Boye Mafe. And that can be very confusing to many offensive linemen who, if they even false step once, those guys have the explosion and the twitch to get through. And so that's where, you know, you're hoping that that creativity that we're seeing in fall practice comes over into the games coming up here in a couple of weeks. But between Winston, Asezi, and mine, and then Boye, or Carter, Teyon, and Boye, I feel pretty good about the defensive end position in terms of having depth, in terms of having guys that can contribute there. Now, I still think Asezi should probably get 60% to maybe 35% for Winston, and then you mix in Mayan where you see fit. But I feel pretty – I feel much better about the defensive end position than I did a few – you know, a few months ago, or even coming into fall camp here.
Yeah, you definitely like to be able to have options, and it's nice to hear that you have some confidence in some guys that are going to go, you know, back up guys like Carter Coughlin, that has arguably been, you know, the most productive defender that they had all of last year. So that is reassuring to hear. Touch on defensive tackle, though. This is still a position to me that I'm maybe a little bit leery of.
Yeah, and I think that's totally fair, because if you thought defensive end was inexperienced, well, I'm going to tell you defensive tackle isn't very experienced at all. I mean, you're looking at a guy, I would imagine the two starters that I've seen consistently throughout fall camp are two seniors by the name of Sam Renner, who's going to be your three technique, and then Mike Adu Treadway, who's the Notre Dame graduate transfer, who's going to be your one tech. And so what you've seen with those two is Micah has been consistently been able to plug the A-gap. He's been consistently be able to be a run stopper, whereas what Jim Panagos likes about Sam Renner so much and why he is ahead of guys like Keontae Shad, Jamal Teague, Noah Hickox, why he's ahead of guys like that is because, number one, he's finally been able to get to year five in a strength program and an agility program where he's maxed out his frame. He knows what he's doing. He has, you know, he's not nervous about anything.
Right.
And one big thing is Renner's able to play with a flat back, which means he's able to keep his pad level low, and he's able to drive into that offensive guard or offensive tackle and move them into the backfield, which causes havoc for the linebackers to shoot through, for him to make a move and try to get after the ball carrier quarterback. Now, I still don't want Sam Renner playing 80 snaps a game, but if this defensive line rotation that Jim Panagos has talked about puts Sam in the 30 to 40 range per game, I'm more than okay with that. Now, behind them, I think you're going to see four guys. Keontae Shad, who is the junior college transfer that Minnesota got last signing day over Oklahoma and Mississippi State. You also see Jamal Teague, who Jim Panagos has been hard on a lot of guys. And by hard, I just mean consistently giving individual attention to seemingly on each one of their reps. There isn't a player that Panagos has worked with more in the spring and into the fall than Jamal Teague. And I know that Panagos is trying to get across to him that you have all the talent in the world to be a very disruptive defensive tackle in the Big Ten, but we just need consistency from you with your technique, with your assignment. You can't go off and do your own thing. And again, he's a young guy. He's a true sophomore now. He shouldn't have played last year, but Minnesota's defensive tackle depth was so thin that he had to. Now he's going to figure back into the rotation. He's your guy that's going to be behind Mike Adu-Treadway. Keontae is going to back up Sam Renner. And then behind them, you also have Noah Hickox, and then you also have Mayan Ahanotu as well. So Hickox behind Teague, and then you have Ahanotu behind Shad. Now, these guys have done a lot of work in fall camp. They've done a lot of work going against an offensive line that I think at least run blocking-wise is pretty good. I mean, if you were there last Thursday night at TCF, you were able to see some of the running backs break off some long runs, and that's because this offensive line knows how to run block now. We'll get to it in a bit with pass protection, where I still have some question marks there. But the way that the defensive line at times is able to create havoc with their one-on-one matchups made me feel pretty okay, you know, about this defensive tackle position. So, like I said, I just think that with those six guys, you're able to redshirt Rashad Chaney, Logan Richter, D'Angelo Carter, MJ Anderson, DV Harris, and you're able to get them 1 year into the weight program, 1 year into a full-time strength and conditioning program where they don't have to worry about, you know, do I have to make sure my body's right or can I lift as hard as I possibly can knowing that I'm going to redshirt, and if I continue to work hard, maybe I'll get some reps in November as Minnesota can obviously play these guys four games without burning a redshirt. So with those six guys in the defensive end, six guys, and I'm talking about 11 guys there, that are plausibly going to see time, especially in the non-conference as Minnesota tries to figure out what is their best or maybe their top eight, top 10 guys moving forward as they get into Big Ten to play. But if there's anything I can stress here is when you're out there watching the game against South Dakota State, Fresno State, Georgia Southern, you're going to see a lot of defensive line rotations as Minnesota's got a lot of different personnel packages for certain situations, and they also want to be able to keep legs fresh. And I think they have the adequate bodies enough to do that, because I don't think there's going to be any more years when you get in November against Iowa and Wisconsin and you look out there and you're watching it on your television or watching it at the stadium where it's like, man, those defensive tackles look small compared to Wisconsin and Iowa's guys. I mean, these guys are big guys now, and I think it's time for PJ Fleck in year three to start to reap some of those rewards.
All right. You know, it's encouraging to hear you say that a number of those freshmen are going to get to be able to redshirt, especially on the defensive line, because, you know, as you and I have talked about previously, your offensive and defensive line is really where you kind of build a program, right? And getting those guys,
especially in the Big Ten.
Right, exactly.
Especially in the Big Ten.
Right. You know? And getting a chance to get those guys to get a year to be more mature, like you say multiple times, you'd rather have, you know, the 22 or 23 year old version rather than the 18 or 19 year old version of that player, right? Getting to play. So that is a very positive thing to hear going into this season, that they're going to hopefully, you know, knock on wood, that they'll get an opportunity to redshirt all those guys. So,
yeah, I just don't think obviously at times there's going to look like it's going to be where the defensive line gets moved out of way and there's long touchdowns or whatever it may be because of that. But I just think that the consistency from this position in year three is going to be much better than what you saw last year, or at least through the first 20 games of the Rob Smith era before Joe Rossi took over. And that's going to be the theme with this team, is if they can just find consistency as a team, as a position group, as an offense, as a defense. So whether you want to look at it at a micro level or a macro level, if they can find consistency from game to game, this could be the year.
Yeah. All right. Linebacker, a position group that, you know, has some experience coming back in Kamal Martin, Thomas Barber. But there are some young guys that factor or seemingly are going to factor into this position group as well. So I'm curious to more so hear about what you're seeing from these younger guys.
Yeah, we can get into that. And I'll tell you that so far in fall camp, we've seen a lot of nickel. I mean, that looks to be your base defense for this year is 4-2-5. And if it's the two linebackers, that means it's going to be Barber and Martin more times than not. Now, that being said, I mentioned it with the defensive line. Creativity has been shown from Joe Rossi. And so if that's going to be the case, I mentioned those 3-4 looks. So there's, you know, one down defensive lineman and 5-6 guys standing up at the line there. That means you're going to get to see some of these young guys like Thomas Rush, like Braylon Oliver, like Josh Awney, like Mariano Sorry-Marin. Those kind of guys are going to find their way onto the field in certain personnel packages, because I think Joe Rossi and this defensive staff, you know, from the sources that I've talked to anyway, are well aware that Thomas Barber and Kamal Martin have played a ton of football. I mean, Thomas Barber has collectively, I think, played in 34 games. Kamal Martin is also a true senior, so he's played a lot of football as well. And they don't want to go into 2020 necessarily with really green guys at the position. Well, in that same respect, they're also aware that you also have to play the best players because you want to win the game. And so I'm going to be very intrigued to see what Joe Rossi does. Number one is the defensive coordinator, but he's also the linebackers coach. And so he knows this position group better than anybody. And so how does he continue to incorporate some of these younger guys? Because, as I said, in base situations, you're likely going to see Thomas Barber and Kamal Martin up there. But say you go into a 3-4 for certain looks, that means Thomas Rush gets onto the field. We've seen Braylon Oliver really come up there as well. And maybe the guy of the position group that has surprised me or has risen up the depth chart the most from the spring is Josh Awney. You know, remember, he played at Highland Park. He was a safety and kind of do it all for them. He's the most athletic player on the offense and the defense for his high school. He gets here. He plays one season at safety. They redshirt him to try and see what he's going to be like after a year in the strength and conditioning program. Well, it turns out he's a linebacker now. And he's been getting a lot of reps with the second team. Now, I don't even really – the second team, quote-unquote, in air quotes here, second team, doesn't really matter to me at linebacker, because I don't think it matters to Joe Rossi. Because you've seen a rotation of guys depending on what the personnel package is. I mean, it could be Mariano and Braylon. It could be Thomas Rush and Awney. It could be Awney and Thomas Rush. Whatever the personnel package may be, you've seen these guys get onto the field because, like I said, Kamal and Thomas Barber are gone after the season, and you don't want to have a bunch of green guys. And I also think that you're going to be able to redshirt James Gordon and Donald Willis as well. I just think that I don't really want to have them burn a redshirt year. When I look at Kamal Martin and I look at Thomas Barber, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself right now, man, would I love to have them back for 2020, but the depth wasn't there when they were in their early years, and you had to play them. Well, when we talk about Thomas Barber, Kamal Martin, Thomas Rush, Sorry-Marin, Josh Awney, Braylon Oliver, that's six guys in a base defense that only uses two. So if you're able to redshirt these guys and not burn their redshirt on special teams, which I think is something that Minnesota's talked about, something that they're debating, something that you saw them do last year with Thomas Rush and Mariano Sorry-Marin. You've seen that's what was one of the big reasons why Kamal Martin and Thomas Barber also were guys that are true seniors now, as they were big guys on special teams. I'd love to see these guys redshirted, because when you get down the line to that 2023 or 2024 season, I'd much rather have James Gordon and DJ Willis or Donald Willis as redshirt seniors coming back with the, I mean, from what I've seen from the eye test from those two in terms of explosion, in terms of burst, it's there. And I remember watching their senior tapes, and I'll tell you, these guys will pop you in the mouth. I mean, that's what Big Ten linebackers do. But if you're able to redshirt them and not burn them on special teams, I'm all for it. I would love to see these two guys get their redshirt.
All right, so let's switch to defensive back, mostly because this is a position group I'm curious about. And, you know, part of me thinks if they're going to be playing a lot of nickel, they must have some sort of confidence, you know, in what they've seen here in fall camp or what they saw in spring ball. This is a position group that we all know is decimated at one point. But it seems like they have a few more bodies here, and they're starting to build some sort of confidence. I know there's some question marks, especially at safety. But what have we seen thus far at fall camp?
Well, nickel, I mean, one of the big reasons why they want to be a base nickel team is just the way that offenses are evolving in college football, how they're evolving in the NFL. But Chris Williamson has been very good for them. If you were to ask me, give me one defensive back to go guard Tyler Johnson in a one-on-one right now, I would tell you it's Chris Williamson. he has been the most consistent in trying to shut down Tyler Johnson. And maybe it's that, you know, redshirt senior experience that, you know, I've gone against. I mean, Chris Williamson was a highly rated recruit coming out of high school. He was goes and plays a little bit at Florida, and then he transfers out. Now he's here at Minnesota. I mean, he's seen some quote-unquote dudes in his day. And Tyler Johnson's one of those dudes. And so maybe it's the confidence that he has, but technique-wise, he's very good. And he knows how to make sure that he doesn't get beat off the line, doesn't get his hips flipped on him, and he's been very good there in fall camp. Now, my big disclaimer when going through the secondary here is I still have question marks with most of the guys in this unit outside of Williamson, Durr, and Antoine Winfield in terms of tackling. I don't know that Keandre Thomas is going to tackle yet. I don't know that Benjamin St. Juste is going to tackle. By the way, it was relayed to me, Luke, from someone who's listening to an earlier podcast in the Minnesota Athletic Department, that it is not Benjamin St. Juste. It is Benjamin St. Juste.
You know, I was told at our live event that I could go on to gophersports.com and actually listen to all of the...
It's funny you mentioned that because I went to gophersports.com and found Benjamin St. Juste page and there was no enunciation guide for me.
Come on now. Somebody's got to change their best over there.
Yeah. So, I mean, my big point back to it before that tangent was I just want to know if some of these guys can tackle. Can you make the one-on-one play in space where... Say you shed the block at the line of scrimmage to jet sweep to Rondale Moore or J.D. Spielman. Are you going to be able to make that play where if you don't, instead of a one-yard gain, it's a 31-yard gain? And that's where Minnesota ran into issues last year. So I feel good about Chris Williamson there. I really don't feel great about the depth behind him there. Justice Harris is still the number two, and I still have nightmares from the first two seasons of Justice Harris's career as the slot corner where whether it was getting burned in, you know, in coverage or whether it was missing a tackle at the line of scrimmage, Justice Harris shouldn't have played. It's just where Minnesota was at. It was the year after the expels or the amount of defensive backs that were expelled off the team. And, you know, he was pressed into early action. So maybe here in year three, he looks better, but we haven't seen any tackling from the secondary at any of the practices that I've been at. So it's tough for me to say. And then on the outside, that's where it gets interesting because at the four practices I've been at, the consistent theme with the outside corner spots is Rod Chance in year one is the corners coach. And obviously it's a reflection of what Joe Rossi thinks as well. They feel comfortable with, I think, four or five guys there that have all rotated in with the ones. There doesn't really seem to be any kind of theme to, you know, what the personnel group is there. And the five guys that they've been rotating through are Keandre Thomas, Coney Durr, Phillip Howard, all guys that are juniors. And then you have Benjamin St. Juste, who is the graduate transfer from Michigan. Reminder, he's only a sophomore in eligibility. And then you also have tee time Terrell Smith. Now, the two surprises from that unit that you're probably thinking to yourself is, wait, wasn't Phillip Howard just a receiver last year at this time? That's right. I mean, he was. And I think it's a credit to him. And I know that Rod Chance is a big Phillip Howard guy just because of how fluid he can change direction and how fluid he can flip his hips and run. I mean, straight line speed has never been an issue for Phillip Howard. One of the reasons why, you know, he was a valued target on the offensive side of the ball in 2017 was because he had that speed. Now, unfortunately for him, every time they threw a ball to him, it was a suicide ball, and he got decapitated every time he caught it, seemingly in 2017. But he made the transition during the season last year. He got an entire spring with his new corners coach in Rod Chance, and he's been rotating in there. I mean, in coverage-wise, he's looked fine. I mean, it hasn't been some glaring hole there. He's been pretty good there. And so that's why you see him there, and then maybe – the guy that gets talked about most is Benjamin St. Juste. I didn't really know what to expect because he plays as a true freshman at Michigan in 2017. Last year, he misses the entire year with a hamstring injury. And then in the offseason, Jim Harbaugh tries to get him to retire so he can get his scholarship on the 85. St. Juste says, screw you. I'm going to graduate and transfer, which, like you and I have talked about, Luke, if you can graduate from the University of Michigan in like 2 years.
Take like any Big Ten school, really.
I mean, anywhere. Good for you.
Yeah.
So he gets here. I mean, he gets here in the summer, doesn't go through a spring ball. And he gets here into fall camp, and you're thinking to yourself, well, I mean, this guy really hasn't played football in like 18, 20 months. So it's going to be a while, right? I mean, it hasn't been that way. In coverage, he's been extremely stingy. He's got the biggest frame on the team at the corner position at 6'3", 185 pounds or so. And he's got a really good length with that. I mean, he's been a nuisance in pass coverage. And that's why you see Minnesota continuing to give him meaningful reps. And so when you look at, well, obviously you can't play all these guys, but I do wonder if Minnesota does some kind of rotation there. Because Coney Durr has been the Coney Durr that we saw the last six games. You also have Terrell Smith, who's now over 200 pounds. And if you haven't gone to Gopher Illustrated and looked at some of the free photos that we have there, you'll really notice it in his legs that have really blown up. And he's still among the fastest guys on the team. And then Keandre Thomas, I know from talking with some sources, has had the best camp, the best fall camp that he's had under PJ Fleck since he's been here. It's been consistent. And that's been the biggest thing with Keandre, whether it's been on the field or off the field, is can it be consistent? And so with this position group, what I think it's going to come down to once it gets to Big Ten play is they're going to look at the game film and see at the corner position who was physical and who wanted to tackle. Because you guys can all, for the most part, consistently cover and pass. But who's going to come up, be physical with the receiver, get off a block and make a tackle? Or who's getting driven out of the play, can't shed a block? I mean, we've seen that in past years from Gopher corners. And so, and that's where this competition, where these guys know, you know, if I can't make the play, there's four other guys that want to get in there. And that's where competition really helps. Meaningful competition really helps. And maybe Minnesota didn't have that the last couple of years there, but at corner, they definitely have that now.
All right. So before we transition to offense, maybe a quick thing that we totally missed on the Goal Line Club tailgate related stuff. They actually have a season pass. You know, everything seems to have a subscription service this year, and the Goal Line Club is not one to miss out on that. So if you want to attend all seven tailgates, you can do that, and you can do that by getting the $225 a season pass to their tailgates. So I don't know if you can actually get a tailgating pass for cheaper than $225. And guess what? With this pass, you didn't actually have to buy any of your own beverages, any of your own food. It's all going to be included with that $225.
Sounds like a good deal to me. I'm missing something. Like if you're going to be coming to all seven games and you want to have a tailgating experience, which in the college football scene, I think it's really important.
Yep.
You know, it's not like an NFL game with the Minnesota Vikings where, you know, my grandfather had season tickets for many years and I never went to a tailgate. But in the college football scene, I mean, it's a big part of the experience is being able to see people that share your common interests. You get to go have a couple beverages with them, feel real nice going into a potentially warm and or cold stadium. So if you're thinking about going to all seven, I think that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah, and again, if you want to just buy individually, you can use, for the South Dakota State game, you can use Opener 5 as a coupon to save $5, OPENER in the number 5. So support the Goal Line Club. That's a great way to support Gopher football. Okay.
By the way, I don't know what the safety position did to you, but are we not going to talk about that on defense?
Well, I kind of forgot about him. I'm sorry. That was kind of mean.
They've been
a forgettable position group, actually, if I'm quite.
Wow. Look at you throwing some shade over there.
They've been kind of forgettable.
Well, I'll say this. They've been inconsistent.
Yeah.
There have been highs and there have been lows. There has been Antoine Winfield saving the game against a very good Fresno State team. And then there has been Jordan Howden getting abused against Illinois and Nebraska, allowing them to rush for 350 plus yards. So if that's your defense, I can't really blame it.
Well, and then there's just the fact that arguably, your feature player there has not been able to stay on the field. I mean, that also contributes as well. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
And that's going to be the big item for Joe Harris-Semiak, the first year safeties coach, is number one, how do you get a consistency from a position group that hasn't been able to find outside of Jacob Huff the last few years? It's been a revolving door, whether it be injuries or poor play at the position. Since Fleck has got here, there's been no Demaryius Travis or Antonio Johnson out there. It's been a lot of different guys trying to figure it out. And so when you look at this 2019 unit, it starts with Antoine Winfield, who has been full go since spring. The little bit of tackling we were able to see last Thursday night at TCF, Antoine Winfield was making plays at the line of scrimmage with his tackling. He was making plays in coverage. He ripped one away from Tyler Johnson for probably the play of the night. I feel pretty good about Antoine Winfield. So the issue is he's only played in four games in the last two seasons. So he played in four games in 17. I believe he played in four and a half in 2018. And how can you get him from four and a half and four to 13? Now, it's not like it's been a nagging hamstring or a nagging quad or a high ankle sprain. I mean, we're talking about a Lisfranc rupture. We're talking about, was it a knee injury in 17? Trying to remember.
I think so. I can't remember either. But regardless, he hasn't seen the field very much. So, and thankfully, the Maryland game is later in the season, I think later October. So that's been kind of his, boy, yeah. I'm not even going to, I was going to say his Achilles heel, but I'm going to take that back because it's not been his strong point.
It hasn't. And that's where he needs to be able to find a way. And I say that, and I'm thinking to myself, like, he has the injury-prone label. Now, you tell me if I'm wrong. I mean, you're a huge basketball guy. You're a huge sports guy, just like I am. You look at the injuries that he's had, and it's like, just like with Zach Anikstad's, you know, non-contact foot pop. Like, this isn't an ankle. This isn't a quad. This isn't some kind of thing that you can prevent with stretching or some kind of deal like that. These are kind of freak injuries. So do you think that Winfield deserves the injury-prone label?
I don't love the term injury-prone regardless because it's so much a product of circumstance. There are guys that aren't tough, right? And those are guys that aren't going to be able to play through injury. In his case, it's a product of circumstance. He couldn't avoid it, and it's not like he's not being tough. Like, he just literally can't play.
Yeah, so again, if he can just find a way to somehow avoid these season-ending injuries, and luckily for Minnesota, Maryland comes at the latter part of October instead of early October / late September. So the other safety spot alongside of him is maybe the biggest question mark I have on this entire defense right now. In the four practices I've seen, it's been pretty nondescript at that other safety spot. The guy who's been getting the majority of the first-team reps has been Jordan Howden. A guy that was extremely inconsistent last year as a true freshman. In my opinion, he probably shouldn't have been playing, but that was the way that PJ Fleck wanted to approach that position. They wanted to get him a year of experience under his belt so he could come back in 2019 and hopefully improve on that. Now, I just haven't seen a lot from him, whether it be in pass, you know, in pass coverage. And my biggest question with him is the tackling. I mean, we saw game after game in October last year where it was Jordan Howden or it was going to be the end zone, and the end zone was winning too many times. And, you know, Joe Rossi covered some things up there once he took over with Howden there and really kind of played to his strengths. But are we going to see that come back to fruition here in September? I don't know. I really want to find something more consistent there. And then when you look at the guys behind him, well, maybe the more interesting point here is the guy that's been backing up Jordan Howden has been Tyler Newbin and not Benny Sapp. And it's also been Calvin Swenson in that second group as well, which means that Benny Sapp and C.J. Smith are in that third group. I mean, Tyler Newbin looks the part, all of it, of a big-time come junior and senior year defensive back in the Big Ten. You know, we listed him, I think, coming out of high school at 6'2", 180. I don't know that he's quite 6'2", but he's really close to it. And he's got all the athleticism that you want. He's got tremendous ball skills. You can see why he was such a great target for his high school team on the offensive side of the ball. And he just plays fearless. And what I mean by that is so many freshmen come in here in a fall camp, and things seem to overwhelm them. It's just the way that it goes. It's your first fall camp. There's your head swimming with all the different things you're trying to learn. With Tyler Newbin, it just because he's playing football out there. And that's refreshing to see, and that makes me think that he may be an option alongside Winfield as things continue to progress. I would guess that he may not be in line for a redshirt, but we'll see. I mean, I think it all comes down to how do you feel about Jordan Howden right now? Now, I know many of our listeners are thinking, I don't feel tremendously great about him, and I don't blame you because I really want to see in the non-conference how he tackles, because that's going to determine a lot of different things. And you know, where he also got into trouble in the Nebraska game comes to mind, that Adrian Martinez picked on him with the play action because he would get his eyes too focused on the backfield and he would suck in too far where they could hit the skinny post right behind him when he's supposed to be that last line of defense. And so I feel great about Antoine Winfield, as good as I ever have been. I mean, last Thursday night showed me that he's ready to go 100% the playmaker that he is. Now it's going to come down to how does Jordan Howden progress in the non-conference versus how does Tyler Newbin continue to come along versus how does Calvin Swenson, now another year older and still on scholarship, how does he continue to progress as someone that has been, you know, nothing will wow you about Calvin Swenson, whether it's athletically, height and weight, but he's very solid in many different areas. And that's where he kind of reminds me of a Jacob Huff, except without the playmaking nature of his, you know, Jacob Huff was very good at ball tracking, very good at making a play on the ball. You know, maybe Calvin Swenson could be that. I just haven't seen enough of him. And so do you want to go with the higher floor in a guy like Calvin Swenson versus a higher ceiling in a guy like Tyler Newbin or Jordan Howden? I'm going to be very curious to see how Joe Harris-Simiak and then more importantly, Joe Rossi really attack that safety position.
All right, let's transition and talk a little bit of offense. Probably start with the offensive line. Again, this is a position group that I think we'll probably have the most confidence in a long time, especially from a run blocking perspective. You've got a number of guys that are going to have another year of experience under their belt because they were pretty young last year, but a very highly rated group from a recruiting perspective. But there is a big question mark, and that's at left tackle. So I guess it's probably really where we need to start.
And I think the big news that I've been talking about on Gopher Illustrated is I haven't been able to get a lot of tidbits out from Tuesday's fall scrimmage because that thing is under lock and key. There was no family members. There was no media members. There was no public. I mean, it was essential personnel needed to be there, and that was the only people that were allowed in. They really wanted to keep it under lock and key, and I'll tell you this much. If Fleck and his staff want something under lock and key, they're more than times going to get it. And so here we are 48 hours removed from that. We haven't got a lot of tidbits, but one that Kyle and I, you know, Kyle has shared with me that he's heard from some people is Sam Schluter is very likely going to be your starting left tackle come 2 weeks from tonight. And that still gives me, much reason for concern. From the little I've been able to see of offensive line versus defensive line one-on-ones, it's my favorite drill to watch in practice. And for whatever reason, we have only seen it one time. That was last Thursday night and was for like 5 minutes. At all the other practices I've been at, they have ushered the media off the field or they just didn't do it when the public was present. And I don't think that's by coincidence, folks. I think that they know that there's a lot of pressure on this left tackle group, and that left tackle group being Sam Schluter and Jason Dixon. And it sounds like Schluter's the one that emerged from Tuesday's scrimmage as the guy. Now, my big point of contention here is, yes, it wasn't great in 2018. He was battling through some injuries, and then just flat out, he had too many mistakes, and that's why Daniel Faalele replaced him. But I will also say there is, as these offensive linemen continue to get older, I mean, another year stronger, another year with Brian Callahan, finally having the same position coach for the first time in your career, I mean, guys, there is a plausible way that Sam Schluter got better. You know, I just haven't seen the offensive defensive line one-on-ones and the reps I've seen. It's been not consistent from a position with Sam Schluter there. And that's where I continue to come back to. I've seen very little. The coaches have seen so much more than I. If you're going to trust an offensive line coach, you might want to trust the one that back in 2016 was the offensive line coach of the year at Western Michigan. Under Callahan there, they've had three guys drafted where Minnesota hasn't had one going on 15 years now. And so even if Sam isn't great with his kick slide or with his punch to try and disengage guys off the line so they can't swim him or speed rush him and he can put them in position to hold him, you know, I would imagine that Minnesota is going to be very creative with their tight ends and with their running backs on that side. Because, Luke, you've watched plenty of goal and go for football games since Kirk Schrock has been the offensive coordinator. It's been a lot of shotgun. So what does that mean? Maybe you,
right,
you keep Ibrahim or Smith or Shannon Brooks in on that side to chip right off the line. So in case he is getting that speed rush, well, you can have Ibrahim. I really got to get this better. It's been pointed out to me on numerous occasions, Luke, that it is not Mo Ibrahim. It is Mo Ibrahim. So something that you and I got to change our best about. But whether it's Ibrahim, Smith, or Brooks, say you chip and then have him go out in the flat, whether it's Jake Paulson or Brevin Spanford or Cole Keefe, say you have him on that left side, have him chip the DN, then go out. Just give Sam an extra little bit of help there to really go forward. And so I think even maybe the bigger question then becomes, you know, Jason Dixon, by all intents and purposes, was supposed to be the starter come 2019. I mean, when Minnesota signed him back in 17, that was the plan, was Jason Dixon was going to be our left tackle, hopefully, you know, after Donnell Green graduates. Well, here we are, and Sam's the guy. So, I mean, Jason is older than Sam. You know, he comes in with just as much pedigree. I think folks also forget that Sam Schluter had a boatload of offers. I mean, a boatload of Big Ten offers when he signed with Minnesota. So it's not like Sam Schluter, and no offense to Luke Rasmussen, but it's not like he's Luke Rasmussen when he signs and his best offer is South Dakota, Air Force, New Mexico. I mean, Sam had multiple, I think, four or five Big Ten offers. And so now that he is a redshirt junior, I mean, you're in year four, and that's what you want playing at your left tackle. It's just, can the foot speed and the punch and the athleticism really catch up with, number one, the bull rush, which Anthony Nelson put him on skates far too often in that Iowa game, and then with the speed rush, where I think the tackles have struggled with for the most part, especially in 2018. I think that's the question marks that I really want answered come, 2 weeks from tonight, because I asked PJ Fleck at the last press conference about the left tackle position and what he's looking for. And if you want to read those direct quotes, it's free on Gopher Illustrated. If you go to just gopherillustrated.com. But the big thing he put across to me and to the entire media there was, I want consistency at that position. I just want to know what I'm getting there. And those guys are battling it out. We'll see who emerges between those two. And it sounds like Schluter's going to be the guy.
All right. And then, I mean, I guess across the rest of the offensive line, you've got Blaze Andrews, Connor Olson, you've got right guard Curtis Dunlop, and then Daniel Fa'alele. So, I mean, we've talked about them kind of ad nauseum, but there's a lot of confidence in that group. There's a lot. I mean, one thing that I think we should highlight is not one of those guys is going to graduate next year. So they should.
The entire 2019 offensive line, including the swing tackle, the swing guard, and the backup center, is going to return for 2020.
Right.
Yep.
Which that's when's the last time that happened, right? Like that's an awesome situation to potentially be in, albeit they all have to stay healthy, etc. But I think we kind of know what we have there. We have pretty high expectations for that group, especially from a run blocking perspective. But you know, pass blocking is something that, as you already harped on, especially at left tackle, that's a position that a part of the game that they do need to improve on.
It is. And you look from left to right there, Andrews is only a sophomore. Curtis Dunlap is a redshirt freshman. Daniel Fa'alele is a true sophomore, and Connor Olson is a junior. I mean, outside of Connor Olson, who's played a lot of Big Ten football in all the last 2 years, Blaze Andrews is still getting his feet wet as a sophomore. He did play a lot last year. But for those of you who listen to Derek Burns' breakdown offensive line play, and you've read Gopher Illustrated from what I've talked about from my sources on the team, it was very up and down. I mean, there were times last year where I know Shiraka was calling certain plays to try and make sure that Blaze Andrews was getting help. Now, Blaze seems to have taken that next step mentally, which has been the biggest part for him, is his confidence, because he played last year and he found success, especially towards the latter half of the year last year, has seen him grow immensely. He has been a much more confident player in year two as a starter. You could see that in the spring. He was much more comfortable with Brian Callahan, much more comfortable in his assignments. That's carried over into fall camp. I mean, he's a guy that can play any position along the offensive line. He's got the skill set, he's got the athleticism, and he's got the smarts to be able to do that. And you look at Daniel Fa'alele and Curtis Dunlap, the two IMG guys, now going to be starting next to each other once again. You just got to know that there are going to be times this year where they're going to look sensational. What comes to mind is that Daniel Faalele pancake in the Georgia Tech game where he went full blindside on the bit and drove that guy 13 yards back and then pancaked him. He's also going to have moments where it's, you can tell it's his third year of football, or maybe he gets beat around the edge from a speed rush, because I think that's going to be the biggest thing that's going to challenge Daniel this year. Is if I was an opposing defensive coordinator, I'm well aware that Daniel is 6'9", 375. Well, let me put my Julian Huff out there at 5'10", 215 and say, hey, big man, let's see how well you bend, because this guy's going to get low to the earth, low to the field. And if he can speed rush around you because you can't punch him down because you're so high up, then we're going to have success. Well, if Daniel does get his arms on him, he's going to pummel him into the ground, and 375 is going to fall on his back, and it's not going to feel great for that guy. So the speed rush with Faalele is going to be key. I think folks are going to really like watching Curtis Dunlap play. And what I mean by that is he's a big boy at 6'5", 360, but I know we've talked about on this podcast, I've talked about on Gopher Illustrated, that I know a lot of people on the team, whether it's players or coaches, that believe that Curtis is the most athletic lineman that Minnesota has. And what is his biggest asset is his footwork. It's very good. Whether if he gets caught out of position, he knows how to catch up. You know, whether it's him getting to the second level, passing off a lineman to get to the linebacker, it's pretty advanced for what he can do. And so, you know, it's going to be highs, it's going to be lows a little bit with Curtis, but I think he's going to flash more than that than with Connor Olsen. I mean, for him, it's just how well can you take over for what Jared Weiler provided last year? Because I think even Derek talked about it. I think Weiler was extremely solid for Minnesota there. And so Olsen spent the last 2 years at guard. Now he's going to rotate over to center. How does he continue to evolve now that he's an upperclassman, now that he is calling out the sets, you know, calling out the protections up front, sliding things one way or another? You know, these five guys up there are going to be very key. And I think maybe the more interesting part is, how does it go from, you know, 6, 7, 8 behind them? Because to me now, Jason Dixon is your swing tackle. And then you have what I believe is John Michael Schmitz is your swing center, which allows where he's your backup center, which means that if one of the guards goes down, I'm not going to tell you that Austin Beyer or Axel Rushmeyer or Nate Umlor is going to come onto the field. I think Connor Olsen goes to guard, and I think John Michael Schmitz comes in at center, because that number two offensive line, Luke, it hasn't looked great. It's been very inconsistent, and I think that's putting it very kindly, just because Kyle Sasek and J.J. Gaudet are fresh off injury. They didn't start the fall camp practicing, which meant that Nate Umlor, where you're thinking to yourself, why does that name sound familiar? Well, you know, he was your former defensive tackle, right, turned defensive end, turned tight end, turned defensive tackle again, and now he's an offensive lineman. I mean, I think this is his final position. I think he looks the part of what an athletic interior guy could be. It's just he needs to play a lot, and so does Kyle Sasek, because he missed the entire spring. J.J. Gaudet needs a redshirt year to get a lot stronger. Nathan Bowe still needs to get a lot stronger. Austin Beyer is a redshirt sophomore, still needs to get stronger. I mean, we need to have these guys that are these freshmen and sophomores get a lot stronger. And that's where we talked about, Luke, the 2019 offensive line is all back for 2020, which maybe then you'll have much more adequate depth for that number eight guy. But for your swing tackle and your swing interior, you're looking at Jason Dixon and you're looking at John Michael Schmitz.
All right. I think we should talk about running back. This is something I've been eager to talk to you about for a while now, because I think I heard that Shannon Brooks may be back.
Well, yeah. The good news is Shannon's going through individual drills finally, whereas Rodney Smith was doing that in the spring. Rodney Smith has been full go throughout the entire fall camp. He's on a snap count to try and make sure that they manage his load. They know what he can do with the ball in his hands. He hasn't taken anything in contact. But where Shannon, the first couple of weeks here, was kind of standing off the side doing rehab with the trainers. Well, that changed early this week, where he started doing individual drills. And so he's being eased in. And so what does that mean? I'm not expecting to see Shannon Brooks until we get into Big Ten play. Frankly, there is zero reason to rush him back. You have Rodney and you have Ivy. I mean, between those two, they deserve all the attention that they get as they're 100% healthy right now. Now, as Shannon gets to 100%, I think the conversation will switch, but he's back into individual drills, and to me, he looks as good as he's been. I mean, he looks as good as you remember back in 2016 against Purdue, where he had that long 75-yard touchdown run where he threw that safety three different times to the ground. But I want him 100% before you throw him out there, because you saw last year in that Indiana game, he looks pretty decent with that vision. That explosiveness is still there. Now you just have to make sure that once he's back, you don't immediately give him, you know, 25 carries. Let's start with 8 to 10 and then maybe get it up to 13 to 15. But those are the three guys to really know. I mean, I would be very surprised if Bryce Williams didn't get his redshirt year back and then Cam Wiley and Trayson Potts didn't get their take their red shirts along with Jason Williamson. Now, I will mention with Williamson, I took a photo of it last week in the last photo gallery on Gopher Illustrated that, I mean, he's running around and he's in terms of he's doing rehab right now without a knee brace. I mean, he's doing explosive lateral stuff and everything looks stable. You know, he's got a little bit of a hitch in his giddy up, but the fact that he's, you know, 4 months removed here from surgery and he's moving around that well, excited to see him in spring of 2020. I also think that Bryce Williams, I mean, I just don't think there's really a reason to not get his redshirt year back.
Right.
It's between Rodney, Shannon, and Ibrahim, I mean, that's plenty of guys that demand touches already. So get that redshirt back there. And then with Trayson Potts and Cam Wiley, to me, and even with Williamson, the limited stuff we saw in the spring, I think Minnesota hit on all three of these guys. Now, Nolan Edmonds is no longer here. But the skill sets for each one of these three freshman running backs is unique to the room, where Trayson Potts kind of looks like a Rodney Smith or a Moa Ibrahim type of back in terms of physically. He is 5'10". He is 190 pounds. But he's, you know, of the running back room, he's so elusive. And what I mean by that is he's not going to wow you with, a you know, these big jump cuts like a Kai Thomas or a Shannon Brooks would. He, you know, he's got the speed, but he doesn't quite have Rodney Smith's speed. You know, he has vision. He doesn't quite have Mohammed Ibrahim's vision that he has for the zone blocking game. But he's so elusive with the ball in his hands. It's just very smooth. And that's what you saw on his highlight tape. And I'm glad that it's translated over now that he's off his ACL tear. Is he's a very elusive guy. And he's been working as a kick and punt returner. I just don't see a need to really burn a red shirt unless he is the primary punt returner or the primary kick returner, which is plausible, but I think Demetrius Douglas is going to have those two responsibilities. And then with Cam Wiley, I mean, PJ Fleck has said, I mean, he's the closest body we've had to Lawrence Maroney since Lawrence Maroney was here. And Cam is a one cut and go back. He is a very vertical runner in terms of he runs pretty high up still. I'm sure that's something that Kenny Burns is working with him on. But the straight line speed is there. He is not afraid to run into the wash as well with that big frame. Now, he's taken some hits because he runs so high up. But he's definitely that one cut and go back that once you continue to put him in a strength and conditioning program for 12 months, it's going to be interesting to see what he looks like.
All right, let's jump to tight end here. I have a pretty I'm not trying to bet you on this, but I'm going to give you a question here. I'm going to set the line at 25 and a half receptions for this tight end group. Are you taking the over or the under on this year?
Oh, man. You know,
don't I set good lines? I set pretty good lines, don't I?
See, I would have been gung-ho to take the over on that, but when we talked to Kirk Shiraka last week, tight end position came up. And he was very tepid about it in terms of he was saying, you know, they got to block, you know, we're going to ask them to block a lot. You know, they have to earn their receptions, yada, yada, yada. I'm going to take the over, but not by much, because between Ko Keefe, my favorite road grading off or tight end that Minnesota has, Jake Paulson, who this is the interesting part, is Jake Paulson's a little bit banged up right now. I believe he's got a Sully brace on his left shoulder. He hasn't been going through contact for the last week. I'm sure Minnesota's just being very cautionary about it, considering they have a good sense of what he can do from the spring and early and fall camp. But then that also leaves you with Brevin Spanford. And Bryce Witham, yeah, he's going to be in there here and there. But I think those top three are going to see a lot of playing time. And especially Brevin and Co. And if Jake's healthy, he's going to mix in there too, because Brevin is just a unique skill set. I mean, he's the Noah Fant type. I mean, he's the best receiving threat Minnesota's had at tight end since Max Williams. And trust me, I'm not forgetting about what Brandon Lingan provided in his sophomore year, where he was really good. It's just Brevin, where he wins is in the green zone and the red zone. So you're short yardage and near the goal line. I mean, that's where I think you're going to see Tanner Morgan throw a jump ball to the outside and go let Brevin go get a rebound. Or you throw it to Brevin across the middle to make that key catch on third down. And I think Co-Keefe has proved, to me at least in this fall camp, that he's become more consistent with his hands, that he could factor in there as well. I just want co-blocking. And that's not like it's not a knock on the kid's skill set in terms of with his hands. It's just that's how tenacious he is as a tight end run blocker. I mean, I was a former collegiate tight end. I know what the responsibilities are, and you have to have a mindset that whether it's me against the DN, me against the linebacker that's rolled down, you want to bury him. I mean, that's what we do. And Co has, I mean, that's in his nature, that Iowa blood in him, that he wants to make sure he's a very tenacious there. So I would take the over on 25. I mean, I guess here's my line for you, Luke, over under 3.5 receiving touchdowns.
Ooh,
to that's tight ends this year.
That's a good line. I'm probably going to take, the under on that.
Interesting. I think that Brevin, I just think that Minnesota is going to use their tight ends near, you know, whether it's Seth Green getting a little pop pass over for potentially a touchdown.
Oh, I forgot about
Brevin being on a fade, or maybe it's a wide dump across the middle to Paulson or to Keith. I think it'll be interesting to kind of monitor.
I regret taking the under, but I'm going to stick to my guns. I'm a man of my word. I'm taking the under. So I'm ready for the Twitter and Gopher Illustrated hate after that fourth touchdown this year. But
well, by the time people are getting to this, they're in the back half of their lawn, so they just want to get this over with. They're struggling. So I don't even know if they're listening at this point, but I think the bigger point with this position group is Shiraka really wants them to earn it, and he thinks that they have. They're on their way to doing that. They still have a ways to go. But going from potentially 10 tight end targets at 18 to 25 receptions, I think that's a step in the right direction.
All right, let's touch on wide receiver here. Tyler Johnson, arguably an NFL draft pick, almost assuredly. Probably even I'm so confused. It used to be a first day guy, but I guess he's probably going to be a second or third day guy.
I think he's going to be a top 100 guy.
Yeah. There you go. Okay. That's an easier way to surmise it. Okay. So we got Tyler. We know what we have in him. Rashad Bateman, he looks the part, like he's grown up quite a bit, physically speaking, and match that with the insane athletic ability. I have to imagine that that's going to be an improvement there. But take me through 3 through 6 here. What do we got?
Yeah, Tyler looks like Tyler. I had this conversation last Thursday night with a former college football coach, and he coached on the defensive side of the ball. And I was asking him, you know, what if you were going to defend this Minnesota offense and these receivers, what would you do? And he's like, well, first of all, I would double team Tyler Johnson the entire game until Rashad Bateman can prove that he can take the top off, or that he can be the playmaker that Tyler is. And I'm sitting here thinking to myself, well, if that's what Fresno State and South Dakota State are going to do, Rashad Bateman, if you are playing fantasy sports, should be rostered on 100% of your daily fantasy rosters, because this dude's going to eat.
Do they have college daily fantasy?
Oh, there are diehards and degenerates out there that loves to do. And hey, degenerates, I am one of you, so that's not me throwing shade in your direction.
Right.
I will bet that I will put money down with the rest of them, but Bateman, I mean, I am so excited to see what he looks like. If that's truly how defenses are going to play, that Tyler's going to get the coverage and Rashad's going to get the one-on-one, Rashad's going to have some days, and I think he's going to have multiple days if that's what they do in the non-conference. But you want to know about 3 through 6. And Chris Ottman-Bell, to me, is in a different tier below Tyler Johnson and Bateman, but above Demetrius Douglas and above Seth Green and Clay Gary. because if something happens injury-wise where Tyler or Rashad need to miss a game, miss two games with an ankle or a quad or a hammy, I feel very adequate that you can insert Chris Ottman-Bell there and you won't miss a beat. Now, it isn't going to be the short to intermediate quicks that make Tyler Johnson so good or the deep speed and route running that make Rashad Bateman, but Ottman-Bell is very, very solid in many areas, and he's got the best hands on the team. He can make those contested catches where maybe he's not able to create as much separation that Tyler does with his explosiveness in a phone booth, where he doesn't have Rashad's speed to that'll really lengthen that separation. But Chris can really make plays himself by going up and get the ball. Now, Demetrius Douglas to me is the interesting wild card here, because the first wide receivers are Tyler Johnson, Rashad Bateman, and Chris Ottman-Bell. Minnesota's been running a lot of three wide receiver sets, so they've been going with 11 personnel, one running back, one tight end, three receivers, five linemen, and the quarterback. Which means that your second group has been Seth Green, Clay Gary, and then Demetrius Douglas. Now, my question for Demetrius is, which Demetrius are we going to see? Are we going to see September-October Demetrius that really had a sophomore slump? Or are we going to see the guy in November that was making plays against Wisconsin or is making key catches against Purdue, making key catches against Georgia Tech? I mean, what are we going to see? Because it's consistency with him. Can he be a guy that can be relied upon in certain situations? I also think the bigger thing for Demetrius is he knows he's not, you know, with that first wide receiver group. He knows he's going to rep in, but he is going to be the primary punt returner and the primary kick returner. And so how does he continue to, as PJ Fleck would say, change his best and really improve upon what he did last year? I mean, he only returned 7 punts last year for 16 yards per average, which is pretty damn good. But if you take out that very nice 69-yard punt return touchdown against Wisconsin, he was around 7. I mean, that's pretty okay, but it's not exactly what Antoine Winfield would be. And I think, you know, I had this question posed to me on Gopher Illustrated, Luke, that what would I rather have happen? Would I rather have Demetrius be the primary punt returner or kick returner, or would I rather have Winfield as the punt returner and Rodney as the kick returner? Which would you rather have happen?
I don't want Rodney Smith. I don't want Antoine Winfield near a specialist role at all.
Me too. At least we are on the same page. And so for Demetrius, that's the next step for him, is really dig in and become kind of a field flipper for Minnesota in the kick and punt return game. Clay Gary earned the scholarship. I'm sure you've all seen it. The Lakeville product got it at the Twins game. He throws out the first pitch. Kyle Gibson gives him the ball. You're on scholarship to tackle him. But where Clay has just elevated his game is he is the number two in the slot. I mean, he's a poor man's Danny Amendola. He's a poor man's, what's the Viking third receiver, Chad Beebe?
He really the third receiver?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I'm not well versed as someone like Daniel House would be in Vikings knowledge, but I mean, if he's your slot receiver, I mean, he can make you miss and, you know, make a quick out or a quick dig or a quick slant. That's where Clay's going to come into play. And then maybe the guy that receiving-wise was the most impressive last Thursday was Seth Green. And maybe it's because his brothers were there and his family was there and Minnesota wanted to feature him. But he was making plays. I mean, he made some contested catches. He was creating space. And that's where maybe he settles into that number four, number five role. You know, other guys at this position like Harry Van Dyne, it's just not consistent for him yet. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's seeing some of the younger guys come in. And so he's got 3 more guys coming in this class. So we'll see how Harry continues to evolve his game in terms of finding consistency. Then we have Jornell Brooks and Eric Gibson haven't been present at fall camp, both dealing with injuries. Nnamdi Adeyemadu-Mare is someone that is still trying to figure it out. And I think he's one of those guys that he has the physical tools. His head's just kind of swimming a bit with everything he's trying to learn. And then maybe Mike Brown-Stevens can also factor into the slot, but I'd feel more comfortable with Clay Gary there.
All right. Let's work through quarterback now. We know that it is the Tanner Morgan show. He's going to get the nod to start due to the Anixter injury. I think some people are blowing the Anixed's injury out of proportion. Well, I think that they're making it more of a story than it is. It's a bummer that they don't get the quarterback competition, right? But in the grand scheme of things, like, Tanner Morgan's still a pretty serviceable starter for them. He showed in six games that, you know, he was more efficient completing passes, etc. It's disappointing because I think we both projected that Anixed would probably start. But in the same respect, like, Anixed wasn't as consistent throwing the ball. Yeah, he might have the flashier arm, but he didn't actually show it in game, right? That was the big step we were going to need him to take. So, yeah, it's a loss at injury because you, from a depth perspective, but in the same respect, like, I don't know. It there must be just not a lot of talk about it. And I know that if it bleeds, it leads, right? So
I mean, I just think it's like a moot point now because I'm not expecting Zach Anixed to play this year.
No, right.
So it's going to be the Tanner Morgan show, and I kind of broke it down on Gopher Illustrated when I went back and watched Tanner Morgan starts. I think I put 19 GIFs in there for you guys to follow along with me, and of which, by the way, Gopher Illustrated is literally and figuratively $1 to join. I don't know what you can get for $1 in 2019, but it's certainly not a gallon of milk, certainly not a gallon of gas. So if you got an extra dollar in pocket change laying around and you really want to try out Gopher Illustrated and get these practice reports and everything that Ryan James and I do on the recruiting side of things, it's a great time to join. So even with this Tanner Morgan piece, it's behind the paywall, and you can become smarter amongst those guys at the water cooler or the tailgate. And where Tanner just needs to improve himself is diagnosing coverage. Because you look at Tanner Morgan's four interceptions last year, three of them were just balls that he shouldn't have ever thrown. Two of them were the linebacker was sitting back and reading his eyes, and Tanner somehow never saw him. One was on a slant where finally in the third quarter, the defense adjusted to the slant. Tanner threw it right between the numbers for a pick. Another one was against Northwestern. It was a deep out. And the linebacker drops into coverage. Tanner staring it down.
Yeah.
Never sees the guy, throws the pick. He also had another one in that game where he just missed on a slant, threw it far too ahead of the receiver, deflected up in the air, interception. It's just diagnosing things, and that is a, you know, you can come back and say, and I would probably agree with you, Luke, that it is, you know, he was a freshman getting his feet wet.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't make that excuse for him in 2020, but I could make that excuse for him in 2018. And I look at what Tanner has done since Zach has gone down, and every practice I've been at, Zach hasn't, you know, been participating, obviously. It's been consistent for him. I mean, he's going against two true freshmen. So
yeah,
you're looking at guys that are trying to find consistency in themselves, but it's just a lot of guys that are trying to find consistency from throw to throw with their footwork, with where they want to place the ball on a deep out, with where they want to place the ball on an in. You know, whether it is, whatever the route may be, I think Tanner's been the most consistent there.
Yeah.
And so if that's what I'm going to get, then hell yeah, sign me up for Tanner Morgan. Ball is the program, consistency.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll take 60% completion percentage and a 2-to-1 touchdown interception ratio again. Sure, sign me up.
Yeah. And I guess from my perspective, I think the identity of this team, I know that they've got some skill on the outside. I still think the identity of this team is going to be running the ball, right? And they are going to be.
Whether it's Tanner Morgan or Zach Anixed.
Right. That was going to be the identity.
That was going to be the identity. I mean, they're still going to pass the ball 20, 25 times a game. It's because you still have the Batemans and the Ottman Bells and the Tyler Johnsons and the Brevin Spanfords, but you also have three very good running backs that are running behind an offensive line that's much more adept right now at run blocking than you are pass blocking.
Right. So, and for this offense to take another step, right, and it was already pretty good last year, but if it's going to take another step, it has to execute on the opportunities that are presented in front of itself, right? Like where Anixed missed on a couple deep balls last year, just like was just off. They have to execute on that, and they do have to cut down on turnovers. But that's the total cliche answer, right? Like, got to cut down on turnovers, got to protect the ball, etc. But they have to be able to execute on the opportunities that they're given to them, because at a certain point, they're going to have to, defenses are going to have to pick, what am I going to try and take away, right? And that's where the offense has to execute. And I think that's where it comes down to the quarterback play. And to your point, it's got to be consistent. It's just got to be consistent from Tanner Morgan.
And that's what I've seen a little bit in fall camp. But I mean, here I was last year at this time telling you guys how great Zach Adingstead was with his deep ball, which is why he won the job.
So true.
And the games came in September and it wasn't consistent. And so if I've learned anything from this position, and I mean, we could even go back to Mitch Leidner. I mean, if you ask Gopher media members or folks from that other Golden Gopher football staff, I think it was Mitch Leidner's spring 2016, fall 2016.
Yeah.
It clicked. I mean, it was spirals. It was, it looked like
this was going into
this was
sophomore
going to be
year,
it.
Right?
Yeah, it must have been. And I remember I've had this conversation with Justin Gard all the time. And it's like, then he turned back into a pumpkin. And so, you know, I've made some claims, and I only can go off what my eyes tell me. And from what people that are smarter than me and around this football team much more than I am can tell me as well. And if the consistent, you know, drumming of the beat, you know, if that consistent drumming continues to tell me that it's been consistent through fall camp, well, I'm going to tell you it's been consistent through fall camp. Now that has to come on to Saturdays or maybe 2 weeks from tonight or Thursday night. But, you know, that's where, if I was South Dakota State, Georgia Southern, and Fresno State, I would put eight guys in the box and say,
yeah,
you know,
beat me,
Tanner Morgan. Right. I know you have Tyler. I know you have Bateman. I know you have Ottman Bell, Span Ford. You have legitimate receiving options.
Right.
But I also know you have Rodney Smith and a good run-blocking offensive line.
Well, I mean,
see what you got.
That's also a challenge to the offensive line, too, right? Which is,
right.
It's like, it's going to be, hey, prove that you can pass protect, right? Prove that you can pass protect when we're basically saying we're daring you to throw and we might sell out. So, I mean, from an offensive perspective, that's what I expect teams to do in the non-conference. But the other thing I do want to touch on before we kind of close this out, you know, if Morgan does get injured or doesn't play, you know, in a game, which is more than likely to happen, just, you know, given the nature of how football has gone for Gopher football the last number of years, I imagine that if he's out, you know, he finds himself on the injury list for the remainder of the year, we pump the brakes pretty hard on expectations. But, you know, where do we expect this team to actually probably go? I mean, maybe you can't even answer that at this point, but do they go?
I really can't, because that's been one of the things I've been trying to figure out, is has PJ decided on a number two quarterback yet? Because as of Monday, he hadn't. I mean, Cole Kramer and Jacob Clark were still splitting reps pretty evenly. And I've talked about, you know, I've had this discussion with Gopher football fans on the Gopher Illustrated message boards, and some folks just can't wrap their mind around the fact that Cole Kramer is legitimately in this race. And I don't understand why that's such a big surprise, other than, yeah, he came from a 1945 offense and what Eden Prairie liked to run compared to what Jacob Clark ran. You know, Jacob Clark ran his RPO system down in Texas, whereas Cole Kramer didn't run that. But once you get here, get to the college, it's a clean slate. And yes, there are some similarities between his high school offense and what Kirk Sciarrocco wants to do, but it's also much more complex at the collegiate level. And so go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I mean, it is more complex what defenses throw at quarterbacks, right, and how they play.
Correct.
But also the speed is so much faster. And let's not kid ourselves. Like, just because Cole Kramer played in an offense, it didn't mean that his skill set doesn't translate to a Kirk Sciarrocco-type offense.
Almost like Minnesota wanted him at quarterback for a reason, even though he came from an inept passing offense.
Right. It doesn't mean that like, imagine if he was in Jacob Clark's shoes playing down in Texas in an RPO system. He's probably the 4-star rated guy, potentially. I can't project that because that's not really my wheelhouse. But
right.
You know, what I saw out of Cole Kramer in high school was, this is a guy that screams incredibly good athlete, also can throw the ball really well. That's a dual threat quarterback to me if I've ever seen one.
Is Jacob prettier looking in terms of 6'5", 220?
Also, he's got the sunshine hair, like Remember the Titans.
Yeah, he looks like Sunshine from Remember the Titans. And, you know, hopefully Ryan Gosling isn't still just this giant liability impact. God, such a liability for that defense. Anyways, you look at Cole Kramer, and again, it's just he's been consistent, folks. And his arm strength, I think, is as good, if not better, than what we've seen from Jacob Clark. And there's been a lot of people drawing comparisons between Tanner and Cole. And I can see why. Physically, they look very similar. Now, I also had people tell me, well, isn't Tanner more athletic than Cole? Tanner has become more athletic, but Tanner, in the spring before his senior year, had a 5'1 40, like a 4'4 shuttle, and like a 27-inch vert. Cole, the spring before his senior year, at the same height, I think 15 pounds less, ran, I believe, a 4.59 electronic 40. 4-1 shuttle and a 32-inch vertical. I mean, if you were going to talk to me about dual threat in an RPO, you know, I'd feel much better with about Cole Kramer's legs than Jacob Clark's, and that's not a knock on Clark because right. He had double-digit rushing touchdowns. But I think that folks are so high on Jacob to be the savior, to be the next guy, that they're forgetting about Cole, who has legitimately surprised the hell out of this coaching staff with the way he's been able to pick up the system, the way he's been able to really kind of comprehend things. And while Jacob, I mean, he's still learning as well. He's still figuring it out. And so I would, you know, if I was a betting man, of which Luke, you know, I am,
yep.
I think Jacob Clark's probably your number two. But if news comes out tomorrow after practice that Cole Kramer's the number two, that also shouldn't surprise me. I mean, in an ideal world, Tanner Morgan plays in all 13 games, starts them all. The number two quarterback gets into four games and blowout. You get to preserve his redshirt. You get to get his feet wet a little bit. And then we're on to 2020. But
yeah,
I just think that folks need to, you know, reel in expectations for Jacob Clark a little bit, and also need to realize that Cole Kramer is also a Division I quarterback for a reason.
I also think it's probably not that unlikely that they try to preserve the red shirt on both of them, irregardless of performance.
Regardless,
right?
That would be yes. I mean, they don't want to play them more than four games.
Right.
I
so
mean, there's the way that quarterbacks have been going through here at the University of Minnesota with injury.
Right.
Like, say Tanner misses two games. I don't think you go to Seth Green there for two games.
No.
I think you throw out the quarterback, whether it's Cole Kramer or Jacob Clark. For those two games, you obviously simplify the offense quite a bit. But the quarterback in this offense, and we'll get into this next week, you know, before we wrap things up right now. But, you know, the quarterback in this offense doesn't have to do a lot. They have to do two things. They have to take care of the ball, whether that's in the RPO or whether that's passing the ball. They just have to be consistent. If you can give me those two things, this offense is going to be the best offense we've seen here in quite some time.
Yeah. It's gonna be interesting to see 2 weeks from now. We probably are ending, you know, maybe middle of the third quarter right now. It's 9:15 p.m. here as we're wrapping up.
We apologize for how long this one went, but you know, that's just the way things go with Luke and I. We say, all right, this is gonna be like a 30-40 minute one, and I think we're like 80 minutes in.
We actually double. I always double the estimate you give me. So.
I'm the worst. I like to talk.
It's okay. So I guess we want to thank everybody for listening. If you're still on your lawnmower, man, you got a big lawn. Like, seriously.
Or if you're at the gym, you must have had a heck of a workout.
Yeah.
If you have an 80-minute commute, God bless you.
And if you and if you're still listening, also God bless you. We just want to thank you all for listening. Again, you can listen to us on many different platforms. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever. We appreciate you listening, and go Gophers.